Its sons away, they fly forgotten as a dream dies at the opening day.
That's right, boy, not bad. If we got to bother God this Sunday, let's bother him with a decent bit of sense, eh? Not all that slop about living eternally in heaven with him, eh? There's nothing cozy about time bearing its sons away. Pretty agnostic, really, isn't it, for him?
What's agnostic, Uncle Jack?
Well, it's halfway to good sense, boy. Atheism says there's no God. Agnostic says, I'm not sure. I don't suppose the chap has wrote any hymn.
World of one class, pebble-dashed estates, housed young couples who had managed to raise the £25 deposit and, with their small children, escaped from the grime of New Cross, Greenwich and Woolwich docks through the newly legislated Greenbelt to fresh air and gardens. In spite of the gardens, we kids lived in the street, gangs of us on every second corner. A ball and a bike were essentials from the age of five. Then came the war and my other childhood. A few days after the last British soldiers left Dunkirk, when my brother Jack was 11 and I was 7, we became evacuees, vackies, and were carried off to another world.
Are you going to stay here and fight the Germans, Mum?
Come here, Terry, while I tie this label on you.
Ah, it's got my name and address on it.
That's right.
I know who I am.
But of course you do. That's there in case you get lost.
I can tell them who I am.
It's in case the Germans gag you and you can't speak.
Honest?
Be quiet, Jack. Come here.
Oh, no. I'm having one too, am I?
Yes.
I'm 4 years older than him.
Stand still.
Westmoreland Secondary School, Form 2C.
Ha! You're a C, rotten C's. I'm an A, big head.
Stop that. Now listen, you two. C's and A's don't matter. He's your brother, Terry. You do as he says. He's older than you.
I'm cleverer.
I'm cleverer, smart Alec, and you're not. Now, you do as Jack says, and you stay with him. No rows, got it?
All right.
And you look after him, Jack. Now, do you hear me?
Okay, Mum.
You're his big brother. And don't you stand any nonsense from him, and don't you dare leave him. You stay together, do you hear?
Can I bash him?
No, I'm not. No! Well, if he's naughty, you can... No. Come on, you two. Come on, help me.
I can look after myself, Mum.
Yes, all right. You look after each other. Now, how's that? Do you hear? You both look after each other.
I'm 11. I don't...
Do you hear?
All right, Mum.
That's right. That's good boys.
You're a big head.
You wait till we get on that train.
Now listen, both of you. Look here. See this? It's a postcard. Now, it's a secret code. You read it, Jack.
Dear Mum and Dad, arrived safe and well. Everything fine. Love, Jack and Terry.
Okay, good. Now, when you get there...
Where?
Well, where you're going.
She doesn't know
where. Find out the address. Now, you can do that, Jack, can't you? Well, can you?
Well,
look, just ask someone.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. Now, both of you ask. Stay together and put the address where they send you in that space there. Now, have you got that?
Is that all? Is that the code?
No. Now, this is it. Our secret. Now, you know how to write kisses.
With a cross.
That's right. Now, you put one kiss if it's nasty, and I'll come straight there and bring you back at once. Do you see? And you put two kisses if it's all right, and three kisses if it's nice. Then I'll know.
Mum walked us under a canopy of barrage balloons to the 89 bus stop by the We Anchor in Hope. They were digging up the golf course on Shooter's Hill to put anti-aircraft guns there, and in Oxley's Wood opposite. At Welling Station, several hundred yelling, rampant children were puffed away to adventure, while Mum stood smiling and waving in a crowd of smiling, waving mums. She told us later she went home and sobbed. Our train rumbled over the arched workshops and railway offices of South London. Dad, railway employee Dad, had taken us over there frequently. He worked under that spider's web of lines in an office at Battersea, Stewart's Lane Carriage and Wagon Repair Depot. Essential war work.
Lean out on the left side at Wandsworth Road, then when you go over my office, I'll be outside there and I'll see you and wave.
Huh. It seemed all South London was out there waving. Jack said he saw Dad in one place, I in another. Dad said he saw both of us. But all any bystander could see of that train was that it sprouted yelling juvenile heads and waving arms from every aperture. We eventually pulled up at a station in a cutting. Liscard, said the boards. We couldn't even pronounce it. Cornwall, we were told. A wall of corn, it sounded all right. The evening sun shone down the length of the cutting, making bars of gold through the smoke and steam of the engine as we were packed into buses that fanned out of Liscard in all directions, breaking up Westmoreland Secondary School for good. Our bus followed another down a long, steep hill past a huge viaduct with another mysterious derelict one beside it, through strange folded countryside with a line of moors in the distance to a school, small and bleak and Victorian. Dobwalls Village School, just outside the village, squat and lonely. All the buildings we had seen looked so old after the new minted semis of Welling. Even the people seemed older than at home. A crowd was waiting for us, and as we were taken into the main classroom, these people, strange in voice and manner, pushed in after us curiously, while we stared at them.
Hello, my lover.
Come on, then. Who's there next? Come on, move on.
There you are, my handsome.
Oh, there you go.
Outside the toilet.
Yeah. All right, children, into the middle of the room, all of you. Yeah. Come on, into the middle. That's right. Come on, now. Come on, everybody. Find the ones you're going to take, then tell the names to Mrs. Eid or Mrs. Misswetherick at the desk, so they can account for everyone with the evacuees, teachers. Miss Shepherd, their head has their lid now. We don't want to lose any now, do we?
Well, that's it.
Come on. Oh, Miss Shepherd, over here, could you? We seem to have an accident.
Yes, just a minute, I'm coming.
Here you are, my handsome. Come on, what's your name, then?
I'm a girl.
Yes, I can see you're a girl.
Come on, let's get in that queue and tell them who you are.
Well, being you, you come on with me.
I'm with my brother.
Two of you, eh?
Yes, him. Yeah, we're staying together.
Oh, two boys is a bit much for us.
What about you, my handsome? What a brother or sister of you?
Now then, children, don't cluster up so tightly. Spread out a bit. Oh, let's have a look at you. People are going to see you, that's it. Come on.
Here, I'll have this one here.
Ow, that's my hair.
Yes, I know, boy. Could do with a cut.
You've got to have my brother, too.
What?
Mum said we've got to stay together. She said so.
Did she now? Are you his brother?
Yeah, we're staying together.
Are you now?
Yeah, together. Both of us.
Well, that's right, then, if your mum said. How old are you boys?
11. I'm 7.
I like boys. Less trouble than girls. Girls, oh dear. Nimby pimby, all tears and temper. Can you top and tail?
What?
Well, we only got one spare bed just now, and you can have a pillow each end. Oh, they're only little ones, you'll fit. Oh, I like little blondies. My family's dark. My son Gwyn is in Egypt now, fighting the Italians. Come on, both of you, you can come with me. My husband's outside, he's booked a taxi. How's that? Ever ridden in a taxi? Well, I hadn't when I was your age. Oh, here's my husband now. Here you are, Jack. We got two brothers. They got to stay together.
Oh, girl. Can we fit them in?
Oh, easy. We'll think of something. Come on, boys, quick, before he changes his mind.
We headed through Dobwalls Village, out into more open country again, past a farm with a huddle of outbuildings which grimly showed their backs to the southwesterlies. Our driver broke the uncertain silence.
They be everywhere, you know, they vacuies.
Aye, all over.
Sneap, maniap, down to Doolow, up over Callington. The whole county's full of them. Didn't know that so many kids in London. You got more than 50 to Dobwalls alone. Two down yonder to Craigo's farm. Three over to Paul Mears. Two boys at Miss Kiddo's, the district nurse. Won't know if we ain't coming or going with us.
Hear that, boys? Hear what the driver says? What's up? Cat got your tongues?
Is he talking English?
No, King English is Cornish. Don't you fret, my handsome. We'll have you talking Cornish yet.
I'll watch it. Not living with a Welshman, they won't. I'll tan it out of them.
When we topped the brow of a hill, there was a lone oak tree. Not very tall, but stark, with all the branches blown one way like a skinny hand.
There we are. See? Double Boys. That's where we live. Double Boys is French. Double Bois. Means two woods. Not two boys, two woods. But we can say two boys now, isn't it?
Is your name really Jack?
Of course it is. What do you think, we're telling fibs?
My name's Jack, too.
Well, that's funny.
We'll have to make sure we don't muddle you up, then.
Do you think you can manage to tell the difference? What are you laughing at? We look just the same, don't we?
He's younger than you.
No, not that much.
I've got hair.
I say, you tell him.
Oh, cheeky, are we?
And he's got your mark, Jack Phillips.
And you're redder and fatter than him, and you talk funny.
Oh, that's because he's Welsh. Them heathens can't speak English no more than we can.
Please, I'm sorry, he didn't mean anything.
Oh, that's all right, boy. He's only saying what he sees and hears.
There's our house, see? Last one on the end of the row there.
We stared at a row of Victorian cottages in the distance. More slate and granite. They looked tiny and grim. Seven of them, as it turned out. How could seven families live in so little space? We entered and stared in wonder at a shining black range with a cat curled beside it, at a canary in a cage, at a green velvet tablecloth with a little brass dustpan and crumbs brush, at a shapeless sofa, at two First World War shells in their cases, nearly 6 inches tall, standing on the mantelpiece with soldered-on army badges that had three feathers and Ich Dien on a scroll. And at oil lamps. No electricity here. But the glory came last. Outside, past hens in a wire-enclosed run, tucked down in a cutting right behind the washhouse, and breathtakingly revealed, was the main London to Penzance railway line and Double Boys station with its goods yard and sidings. The rural silence of Double Boys was shattered at intervals as express trains roared by a few yards below us, steam and smoke belching over the cottages. Local trains chuffed, goods engines shunted and banged and clattered, shouts echoed, signals clacked, and bells announced the 9:12 a.m. up to Plymouth and the 4:20 p.m. down to Truro and Falmouth. Our address was seven railway cottages. Our foster parents were Jack and Rose Phillips, Auntie Rose and Uncle Jack to everybody in Double Boys. He was a South Wales miner turned plate layer on the Great Western Railway. Their own son and daughter were grown up, she married, and he in uniform in the desert. That night, in the secrecy of the tiny back bedroom, Jack and I stared at Mum's postcard and considered our code.
How many kisses should we put?
I vote three.
I'm not sure.
Come on here, you two. What's all this? Up the damn door into bed. What are you hiding there?
Nothing.
Well, come on, then. Who's going at which end?
Can I go this end, Miss Phillips? In the corner.
All right with you, young Jack?
Well.
Well, what?
Will there be enough air for me in the corner? He's ever so small. Smaller than he looks.
I'm not.
I think there will, boy. We'll open the window, is it?
Thank you, but... Oh, no, I must.
Must what, boy?
He gets asthma.
I don't. Not much.
All right. I won't tell anyone. Now, listen, you, Jack. We'll open the window. There'll be lots of air, and he'll be able to breathe there in the corner. You take my word. I know about asthma. There, is that all right?
Yes. Thank you, Mrs. Phillips.
Did your mum tell you to see about the air?
No, I thought it myself.
Did you now? Well, you're a fine boy. Now, into bed. Go on. Oh, no, wait a minute. Do you say your prayers at night? Well, do you?
No.
All right, then. In you get. My Jack's a heathen, too, but I'll say a prayer for both of you. Now, look, boys, if you want to go outside during the night, you've got this here, do you see, under the bed.
Why should we go outside?
Why? Well, if you want to go down the garden, of course, to the privy.
Oh, yes, outside. Sorry, Mrs. Phillips.
Auntie Rose, I said you call me, right? Well?
But you're not our auntie. Our auntie's in Peckham.
No. No, I'm not, you're right. You call me Auntie Rose when you want to, is it?
Christ, how so soft in here.
There, look at you. As snug as bugs in a rug.
What?
Well, that's what we say. As snug as a bug in a rug. Only there's two bugs in my rug.
I'm just a bug.
He's a ballast sometimes.
He didn't mean to say that. He's just stupid sometimes.
I'm not. You are.
Well, he's young, isn't he? When he gets to your age, you'll know better. Now, I'm going to put out the candle, if you're ready.
Could you leave it, please?
Don't you like the dark?
No, it's not that. We've got to...
It's bedtime now.
We've got to send a card to Mum and Dad.
Oh. This one?
Yes.
Is that your writing? It's very grown up.
No, it's Mum's.
Well, she's already written the card.
You've got to put your address on it.
Well, you've done it, haven't you? Yes, that's more like your writing. That's not how you spell this card. I'll do you another card in the morning. A nice new one with a picture. How's that?
No, no. We've got to put something else on.
What's that? Well?
Kisses.
Well, all right then. We can do that too in the morning.
We want to do it.
By ourselves.
All right, then. You do it by yourselves, then, that's right. Now, you got something to write with?
Yes, here, a pencil.
All right, then. I'll leave the candle a bit and then come back again, is it? And watch you put out the candle the right way. We don't want a fire, do we? Your mum wouldn't like that.
How many kisses?
I've had three.
Perhaps we should take one off, because we've only got one bed. It's terrific here. It's like being on holiday, only there's no sea. What about no electricity?
I don't care.
No indoor lab?
I don't care.
How many should we put then?
We ring the card with kisses and posted it next morning. It made no difference. Mum still turned up unannounced within the week, just to make sure. Jack and I were ringed with love. Not that we thought in such terms. The word love would have embarrassed us. But here were two strangers who took us in, and in no time at all were our other parents. Just there, taken for granted, that was their achievement. And I can still see Auntie Rose's slightly inquiring smile when we had pleased her, and still feel the warmth of her body when she held us, and her hands, so much rougher than my mother's, but just as gentle. She had a saying she used most afternoons. No amount of mockery from us would make her abandon it.
Oh, I'm done for. I'm just going upstairs to throw myself down.
And there was Uncle Jack, with his ferocious secret scowls and grins and his brusque delivery.
If I was your father, I'd...
was the start to many a threat that held no terrors for Jack or me.
Bloody Cornish.
Uncle Jack would say without rancor.
Bible-punching Tories. Send them down the pits for a bit. Then they'd know they were born.
What are Tories?
We wondered.
Why punch Bibles? It's just an expression. They don't actually punch them. What do they do then? I think they just bang them down hard in church. I've seen them do it with hymn books.
Oh.
I've seen it in the pictures too. In westerns, they talk about punching cattle. But they never do. They just punch each other.
I stared at a cow in a field and imagined punching its massive forehead, wringing my fist in agony at the result.
Bloody Churchill,
was another of Uncle Jack's remarks that seized our shocked attention.
He sent the troops in against us at Tonopandy, didn't he? Nay, Bevan, there's your man. On the opposition benches, all by himself. Ackley, Morrison, Cripps, they're all in the government. Part of it. Sold out.
But in spite of these sentiments, he seemed to support the war effort and listened, rapt, to Churchill's speeches, and went drinking on Saturday nights with his allegedly Tory Cornish workmates, singing his way home from a pub in Liscard. For Dobwalls was dry. The Wesleyans had seen to that.
Bloody chapel. Bloody hypocrites. 4 miles to wet your whistle. It's bloody antediluvian.
You have struck. Everyone will hear all up the coast.
I shall hope so. Half of them here with me.
You'll wake the boys.
Good job. Tell me, then.
Welcome to Cornwall, Uncle Jack. Oh. If you don't like it.
Oh, do. Back to bed, you.
Work, boy, work. No work down in the valleys. Come with the Great Western, didn't I? The company. Got the house and all. Tied, eh? Tied. Like our lives.
Oh, ho, ho. Plenty of time for all that in the morning. Now go on up to bed, all of you. Shall I wake you for morning service?
I'll bloody kill you if you do. If fair and jowled.
Oh, big man. Couldn't kill a dozy fly with a frying pan. Go on, bed. And you boys.
Want to splash your boots first?
Yes, please. Yes, I'm dying to.
Come on, then.
And Jack and I, pyjamaed and barefoot, joined the row of men at the wire fence that overlooked the railway cutting. We thought we were men indeed to stand in such a row, barefoot on summer Saturday nights, as the last train sounds echoed over the Foy Valley in the distance and left the dozen or so houses of Double Boys to silence. But if the bites of Auntie Rose and Uncle Jack were toothless, their rebukes hit their marks. For instance, nearly 3 years later, when most of the Vackies had drifted back to London, I was, at 10, the brightest pupil in the village school, coming top in every exam with monotonous regularity. I brought home my report one term and handed it to Auntie Rose, who read it and looked at me with shining eyes. Learning impressed her.
Oh, wait till Jack sees this.
What's up?
We got his report here. Do you want to see it? It's from the school.
From school? That's unusual. Fancy, his report comes from school.
And Uncle Jack, just back from work, stripped off his jacket, his waistcoat, rolled up his sleeves and sluiced his arms, hands, face and shining bald head, dried off, removed his boots, put on his glasses, and finally sat in the armchair to read the golden report.
I got all 9s and 10s. I only lost 5 marks in the whole exam, every subject.
5? What did you lose them for?
I gaped at the question, breathless. My world turned upside down. It's not what you achieve, but how far you fall short that matters.
2 silly mistakes. I read nearly the answers, and 3 were taken off for untidiness.
Carelessness, isn't it? That won't do, will it, boy? You can do better than that. Let's see all 10s next time.
Oh, Jack, he's top of the whole school. Some of them are 15 years old. He's 10. What more do you want?
Bloody yokels. Clods. Cornish farm labourers. What do they know? 10s, boy. 10s next time. 10s. And less of this untidiness. Pass me the newspaper.
Uncle Jack's lesson gave me something to think about, but Auntie Rose's bypassed the mind. We'd been for a walk up the lanes. Her married daughter Ethel was staying. Each of us had a jam jar to search for wild strawberries. There weren't many, but I persevered and after much effort had a miserable half jarful. I poured them on my plate at tea time and planned to save the fattest till last.
I'm glad to get the weight off my feet.
No mistake.
You got your strawberries there, then, have you, boy?
Yes.
Aren't you going to offer them round, then? We've got a guest.
I flushed till the hair rose on my neck, aware of my gracelessness, but also of the injustice.
But you lot didn't bother. I mean, I picked them while you were talking.
Greed I'm bringing up here, is it? What if I only gave you the food you got yourself?
Sorry. Would you like some, Ethel?
No, thank you, Terry.
Would you, Uncle Jack?
No, thanks, boy.
Auntie Rose, would you like some?
She hadn't finished her lesson.
No. You have them, boy. You obviously need them most.
No one ate the wild strawberries. The hamlet of Double Boys had 4 local children. To these were added 6 Vackies. The day after we arrived, Jack and I joined the other Vackies, 3 boys and a girl called Elsie Plummer, heavy with imminent puberty. We met the 4 locals, Jimmy Peters and the 3 Bunny children. We all hung from the branches of a large beech tree at the crossroads by the station, This tree commanded an astonishing view, the Foy Valley. It was almost as heart-stopping as the first sight of the sea on summer holiday. The main road plunged down past a quarry into woods. The railway snaked along the valley side on a thrilling succession of bridges and viaducts, and the tops of trees waved and swayed into the hazy distance, beckoning magically and majestically. Jack voiced the aching corporate longings of the Vackies.
Let's go down the woods.
There was a silence while the locals stared at us. Then...
What for?
What for?
Yeah, what for?
To play.
Play what?
Just play.
What's wrong with here?
We stared at the dingy crossroads where we stood and a way out over the enchanted valley. Can't you see? Are you blind? There lay adventures, endless woods, a rushing river, fish to catch, streams to dam, paths, tracks, the quarry to climb, creatures and things we hadn't heard of. Oh, what for? As the locals drifted away, the Vackies charged down into the valley, kicking the tops off thistles and on into the dappled gloom of our vast, new, empty playground. But the Vackies and the Double Boys' children soon found enough things in common to make friends. In the village of Dobwalls, however, where we all went to school, it was war. I don't know how or why it started, because we were kept in separate schools, but it was instant and total. We 10 from Double Boys would walk to school together quite happily, and as we got to the village, separated without conscious effort into Vackies and village kids. Some well-meaning person suggested a cricket match. We walloped them. A football match followed. The score was Vackies 30-odd, village kids too. We arranged our own private group fights in the dinner break and returned to our schools disheveled and bloody to get our knuckles wrapped with the edge of a ruler, more painful than the fights. And our leader, Frank Emmett, fought their leader, Sam Finch, in single combat. A few months later, the furious winter of 1940-41 took hold. The village pumps were encased in ice, and the wind whipped the snow down off Bodmin Moor, making 6-foot drifts in the middle of Dobwalls. The children arranged a mass snowball fight one dinner break. Vackies versus village kids. It included every child in the district between the ages of 5 and 15 and got utterly out of hand. Not that it was ever in it. Waves of school children surged up and down the village street hurling things or just shouting. When the bells sounded, while some law-abiding souls went back to school, the rest of us spilled over into fields and chased each other to Julo Bridge. The climax was a snowball shootout as the wan winter daylight faded. We swaggered back into class in front of the admiring looks of the more timid kids to have the smirks wiped off our faces by Miss Shepherd and Mrs. Langdon, who laid their rulers mercilessly across our chapped and tingling fingers. One day later, there was another group transgression, chanting profane versions of hymns ancient and modern in public.
There is a fair maid far away with a curling curls on, and she, poor maid, was crucified, but said she felt no pain. Oh, dearly, dearly, did she cost Savage had to pay double, and though she tied a knot in it, he got her into trouble.
The tiny Miss Shepherd was finally forced to bring out the school cane and wield it on several of the bigger boys, Vackies and village kids. She was halfway down the row of proffered backsides when the cane, groaning under its excessive burden, gave up the ghost and snapped in two. Miss Shepherd burst into tears and the row of unyielding bottoms returned to their seats. The whole village divided. Those with their own children and many others regarded the Vakis as a pestilence to be endured or resisted. But there were those who suddenly found themselves with new families, energetic, bright children who won their hearts and brought a new vitality to their village, trebling the under 16 population. Prominent among the pro-Vaki faction was Buckroyd, the Wesleyan minister. Our main classroom was in his chapel. Our juniors were in a tin shack optimistically called the Hall. Our playground was his consecrated churchyard, hide-and-seek between the slabs of slate.
'Tis sacrilege, Mr. Buckroyd, disturbing their dead like that.
I don't think the dead mind too much, Miss Palmanna.
Oh, they do make up profane words to hymn tunes, I heard, they.
And so do our children, Miss Palmanna.
Oh, but not so profane as they.
Well, they're, more inventive.
More sinful.
There's a war on, Miss Palmanna.
And in the rumor and gossip that always rides in tandem with war, I mean our private war, stories abounded of Vakis who behaved outrageously or were treated with cruelty.
Have you ever heard? Over to Tremib, they chopped off all their chicken heads. Every living one of them. Two little savages, only 7 years old.
No, is that so, my dear?
And down to Wurlegan, they slaughtered lambs in the fields, fired a rick. Oh, 'tis bloody mayhem, I'm telling you. Oh, sorry, Mrs. Bestwitherick. I didn't mean to, but 'tis terrible.
You know that farmer up the edge of the moor, Pin Maligan? He had two Vakis billeted on E.
Ah, boy and a maid.
Ah, well, he locked him in the linny all night. Huh? Then he took his strap to him after breakfast. His breakfast, they didn't get none.
What was it there for?
Now then, they was 9 and 10 years old. Well, their father got here. In the guards he is, grenadiers, back from Dunkirk.
Yes, they was there, I read it.
He went AWOL. Went to Pen Maligan's farm, punched the old round his own farmyard, then took his kids off with him back to London. 'Twas a proper job.
Have you heard of anyone else giving they back is what for?
No. Everybody round here be giving up for Lent.
And though such stories always took place in the next village but one, the mythical guardsman was a famous and cautionary figure.
And now for our special discussion program for young people, To Start You Talking. Here is Douglas Allen.
Good evening, everybody. Tonight, the young people here in the studio are going to give their views to the radio doctor on what they feel should be given, or perhaps should have been given, in the way of sex instruction. Well, now I'll hand over to you, doctor. Will you carry on, please?
I think perhaps the quickest way to get our bearings is to find out how you got hold of what little or much you know about sex.
Look, Elsie, in here.
Is this your camp in the woods, Terry?
And Jack's, and the others.
Can I come in?
You mustn't tell the others I let you.
Cross my heart and hope to die.
Okay.
Cool. It's lovely in here. Dark. Smells of resin. No one would ever know we were here. Do you want to play doctors?
What's that?
I'll show you. Are you 8 yet?
No.
I'm nearly 13. I'll be doctor first.
If you like.
Lie down then and I'll examine you. Not like that, daft. You've got to take all your clothes off first. All of them.
My underpants, too.
Of course.
Don't want to.
You shy?
Yes.
So am I. Let's undress together.
All right.
Did you know boys and girls are different?
I think so.
Do you know why?
No.
It's to make babies. You put your... that. What do you call that?
A widler.
Well, girls don't have one. We have a crack. See? That's because when you put your widler in my crack, then I have a baby.
Don't be daft.
True.
Wouldn't go.
Now, I thought that.
So there.
It's still true. I don't think it works till you're married, I think. Or grown up.
Anyway, little babies come out the end of your wiggler, all swimming.
Don't be daft. You're stupid.
The husband has to lie on top of the wife. Then it works. All husbands and wives do it. Your mum and dad do it.
Shut up.
Shut up yourself.
I don't believe you.
It's how all babies come. You, me. The baby grows for 9 months in here, then comes out the woman's crack.
Babies are too big.
I know. I don't get it. The woman screams, so it mustn't half hurt. I don't think I want babies.
You made it all up.
The animals do it too. You watch. I have. Up to Crago's farm. Nobody saw me. Crago's bull. Oblige me. It's Whittler. You should see. They all laughed.
We're not like animals. We got souls.
You're going to play doctor then? Now, what seems to be the trouble, Mr. Smith?
I don't like you.
Yes, you do.
And she was right. I did. I loved her, sort of. She spoke with a calm authority that was thrilling and disturbing. I went home and stared at Auntie Rose and Uncle Jack. I tried to imagine them doing something so rude and unlikely. No, not possible. I thought of my parents. No, the whole picture was grotesque.
Uncle Jack, have we got souls?
Nobody really knows, boy, though they say they do.
Nobody in the whole world?
No, but if you ask me, it's all tripe, all of it, all religion. Rubbish.
So we are just like animals.
Well, I wouldn't say that, boy. We got minds.
How could Uncle Jack know that we'd just been having our first conversation about sex?
Auntie Rose, have we got souls?
Of course we have, my love. What do you think we are, animals?
Uncle Jack says we haven't.
What does he know?
There appeared to be nothing but confusion on the subject in the adult world, so how could Elsie know? But the assurances of her still childish but swelling body against mine, the changes in herself she pointed out so proudly, the persistent rumours of the truth that I encountered among the older children, and the overwhelming evidence in the countryside all round us, gradually undermined my incredulous resistance. So, when the bigger boys were busy elsewhere, the promise of a breathless, dry session of doctor with Elsie, full of intimacy yet reserve, created a trembling, inexplicable excitement that was quite fulfilled by the cool, clinical little scenes we acted out in our pine-scented surgery in the woods.
Elsie Summer was a very good girl. She went to church on Sunday to pray to God to give her a strength to kiss the boys on Monday.
One day, Jack and I joined Ken and Elsie Plummer behind the row of outside privies that sat across the foot of the gardens of railway cottages, arrayed on Granny Peters' gooseberry bushes. Granny Peters, to us half funny, half witch, lived in the court at number 4. Her gooseberry bushes were laden with golden, hairy goosegogs.
Look, Ken. Expressive Elsie keeps watch here. Will we crawl across the park?
Yeah, I vote for that.
I want to come with you.
Well, you can't.
Why?
Because you're useless.
You mean you are, you sod?
Oh, you always make a noise or get seen or something.
I can't help it if people notice me.
She makes me sick.
Well, Terry's the smallest. He can get under the pickles and pass out the goose gogs.
Yeah, no one will see me.
Then you and me, Ken, can get round the back there and get all them.
Okay.
And Elsie can stay by the corner and see all the windows if anybody come to the bogs.
I'm not staying there. It smells.
Stop moaning or we won't give you any.
Don't want any.
All right. Come on. Terry first.
We wriggled round the odorous privies on our stomachs with an excess of secrecy that would have excited attention from a mile away. We boys slid in among the bushes while Elsie kept watch and communed with her changing body.
Come on, Terry. Pass on the house.
I am.
He's eating them.
Hey, you. You boys, what you two?
Oh, no. That's her.
What you doing in there?
Where's your sister?
She's gone.
Why are you lying down in there?
Oh, I'm stuck. Look how you're squashing them all.
I can't help it. It hurts.
Come on, you three. Out of there.
So you two tried to steal Granny Peter's gooseberries, did you? Well, did you?
Yes, Uncle Jack. We were only scrumping.
Scrumping? What's that then? Cockney for stealing?
Scrumping when it's apples and things.
I know what it is.
I'll never hold my head up in the court again. Ashamed I am of both of you. Poor old Granny Peters.
What are we going to do with you?
You're going to go into her and say you were sorry to start with, and you take her in some of my rock cakes.
Yes, Auntie Rose.
You know she makes jam from all her fruit, and she earns her money from it, and she gives us a jar every Christmas. And then you steal them.
If you wanted some gooseberries, why didn't you ask? Were you hungry?
No.
You take my rock cakes and you go in there and you ask her if there's anything you can do to help her.
Granny Peters! Granny
Peters! Who's there?
Self, Granny Peters. Jack and Terry, the boys from Auntie Rose's.
Ah.
We bought you some rock cakes from Auntie Rose.
Annie Rose? Oh. Her rock cakes. Ah. Give them here. I'll soak they in my tea. You boys be from London, eh?
Yes.
I was to there once with my Arthur. Too many horses. Everywhere. Horses all round you. Worse than Plymouth, twas. Come here, my pretty. Come closer.
Oh, no.
Go on.
She smells funny.
Oh, you're pretty and no mistake. Don't wriggle, I won't hurt thee. You mind me and my Billy. Ginger, they call thee. All down to Wall Street. Ginger, you bar me, you ought to join the army. And he did.
Auntie Rose said...
Oh, Billy, my firstborn, my pretty, where are you to now? South Africa he went and the Boers shot he. There's his medals. They weren't simple. The army took them, so he couldn't have been, could he? They maids leading on. 'Twas they fault, not he. He didn't hurt they. You wouldn't hurt a fly, would you, my pretty?
She won't let me go.
Don't worry. I think she's all right.
His father, he was a simple one. I had eight from me. All gone to God. He took an all. Three in the war, two when they was little like you, my beauty. Oh, Henry, he went on the railway, walking on the line, down the valley. They threw a bottle from a train and it hit his lovely face. Oh, the 4:12 to Snozzle twas. Oh, I outlived all my own children. 'Tis not natural. 'Tis wonderful lonely.
Isn't Jimmy Peters dead, your son?
Oh, yes. Yes, I forgot he. Huh. I don't count he. He's still here.
If you'll let me go, I'll take you a jug and get some water for the pump.
What for? 'Tis our full.
Auntie Rose said we got to.
Oh, Auntie Rose. Yes. Rock cakes. They're well named.
And I'm sorry we tried stealing gooseberries.
You want some gooseberries? Go on, then. They be handsome now. Take that bowl and bring me some. I'll make you some jam. Here. Come here, little one. Let me touch your hair.
I gotta go. Auntie Rose is calling me.
Give me a kiss, Billy. Henry, give your mum a kiss before you go to work.
Well, bring you some gooseberries in this bowl, Granny Peters.
Come on, quick.
The 4:12 to Snozzle twas. They shot he.
The friends of my childhood again are before me. Each step wakes a memory as freely I roam. With the ash grove, alone is my home.
That's lovely, boys.
That's right, both of you. You sound as though you're thinking what you're singing, as well as making a beautiful sound.
You're going to kill us now, then, Uncle Jack?
Oh, well, I'm not sure.
You promised when we got the ash grove, right?
Promised what?
I didn't say it was right. I said it was not bad.
Oh, that's cheating.
Promised what?
He said he'd tell us the story of the army badges.
On the two shelves on the mantelpiece.
And Echdin.
Oh, Jack, what do they want to hear all that old history for?
He promised.
Yes, he did.
Horrible war stories. Isn't this one enough? Our Gwyn's out there, you know.
They're boys, Rose, not Wurzels.
Gwyn the desert rat.
Oh, to the chickens, me.
The hens who talk more sense than you.
Go on, Uncle Jack.
Well, I was in the Welsh Bantam, see. If you was under 5 foot, you weren't accepted at first. Good enough to dig coal, too small to fight, they said. Then, after our high command had let the Germans slaughter most of the good men, they needed more cannon fodder, so they took us titches. We made a whole regiment, the Welsh Bantams. We was in the line up against the Prussian guards, big, fine fellas, all of them, over 6 foot tall. How about that?
God, that's terrible.
Oh, no. Not so silly. Those big men was easier to hit, see? More of them. Every man's the same height when a bullet hits him. He's horizontal.
That's brilliant.
I like him on, but so stupid.
Hey. Don't you let me catch you saying anything good about our leaders, boy. Especially that particular lot. They were just men, like you will be sooner than you think. What were we doing fighting the Germans at all? Bernie Bevin tried to stop it with a general strike of all the German unions and ours, but they called him a traitor. Bloody patriotism beat him. Now he's in the government. Where's the sense?
But the shells and the badges. Why aren't we in the Great War?
Great War, eh? Who taught you that?
I heard it.
Oh. Great. First, we was up against the Saxons. They was all right. They didn't like the war no more than we did.
What does Echdin mean?
It's Welsh for I serve. The Prince of Wales feathers and his motto. It's funny. Ich's like German. It's more German than English. But we are Celts, dark and small, different from you Anglo-Saxons, fair-haired like them buggers.
Are Jack and me Saxons?
Were the Prussian guards fair too?
Well, some of them, yes. They were in one part of the wood. We were in another. Mamet's Wood near Wipers. Over 1,000 of us, the same of them. Our artillery started sharing them. Their artillery started cheering us. Everyone got blown to bits. Who killed who, I don't know, bloody fools. The wood was blasted away too. Trees like used matchsticks stuck in the mud. Then it got cold. Icy. Germans and Welsh dead, frozen together, bayonets in each other. Frost made them all white next morning. It didn't look real, almost. 17 of us came out alive. We got one of those insignia each.
But you've got two.
Ah. One is my mate's, Igor Davis. A faceman from Ostrud. Even smaller than me.
But if Ivor Davis was one of the 17, why didn't he keep his badge?
There were plenty more battles, boy.
Cool. You were lucky, weren't you, Uncle Jack?
I bet he was clever and kept his head down.
No one was clever. The clever ones weren't there at all. No matter what happens to you in life, just remember this. There's no justice. There never was and there never will be. But you've got to pretend there is.
We call that being civilized. Live your life like that, and that's all you can do. Just remember two things. It's not fair, and don't be late.
I turned the massacre in Mamet's woods over and over in my mind. I acted out the scene in our woods below Double Boys, creeping through the undergrowth down by the river. I hid behind trunks as shells ripped through the foliage, tearing the boughs off, splintering the green wood, uprooting forest giants, converting trees and men to blackened stumps. Why did the thousand of our men go in there? And why did the Germans? Who wanted to capture a wood anyway? All those tough little Welshmen hugging the ground, getting blown to pieces in spite of their lack of inches. The event had horror, fascination and mystery, which I could leave only briefly behind as I emerged from our woods into the rabbit field, one of 17 survivors going home to tea and the polished mementos on the mantelpiece.
It was raining, raining, raining. The soaking summer of 1916. Everything was sodden. Your boots rotted on your feet. Mud. There was mud everywhere. Chest deep sometimes, but there was no clean water to drink, of course. I had a draw hose from a shell hole nearby. Then it stopped raining. The water went down, and we saw there'd been a dead frog in there all the time. Just as well as I boiled it.
Oh, Jack.
What's so terrible about a dead frog? Stupid. He didn't mean a frog. A frog's a Frenchman. French soldier. Ugh. Ugh. Was he all bloated like that cow in the river?
I'll say.
Oh, I feel
sick. I'll bet he was rotting like your boot.
Ugh. Now stop that, Jack. That was over 20 years ago.
This one's on now, isn't it? If it goes on long enough, Jack here could be in the army easy. Home by Christmas, we was told. Over 2 years since our Gwyn has been out there.
Our war took on a new, dreadful fascination for me. It was no longer an imaginary bang, bang, you're dead with sanitary corpses, mostly German, and bandaged tidy wounds. It became headless and bloated, mutilated and disemboweled. Like the rabbits we snared, then messily gutted with our penknives.
Terry, let's play families.
No.
Oh, go on. You be Dad and I be Mum. I love you, Dad. You can tell. Listen to my heart. Feel it. No, inside. Undo them, can't you?
Don't want to.
You do?
You're older than me.
I'm only 14.
Boys should be older than girls.
Who said?
They always are.
Not. Mrs. Kitto's older than Mr. Kitto by miles.
How do you know?
Everybody knows. So it's all right. I like you best. You're the youngest. Have you seen my new knickers?
Everybody has.
They haven't.
When you do high kicks.
Want to see them now? Want to touch?
Don't know.
You knew the other day.
Shut up!
You want to, really?
I'm going.
You're scared.
Just stop talking about it. It's embarrassing.
Sorry. Yeah. Lie down. By me. I won't speak again. Promise. Give me your hand.
Suddenly, soldiers descended on Double Boys. The big house was requisitioned and overflowed. Nissen huts appeared along the drives. Girls took to walking the lanes nearby with increasing frequency. Elsie, now fulsomely 15, lost interest in me. If the Vackies had shocked the village, the soldiers stunned it.
Here, and only got one ball, scoring, and you were very small. Himmler, and only Schiller, and for all good balls, there's no balls at all.
Mr. Buckroyd? Mr. Buckroyd, have you heard?
Yes, yes.
There's a war on, Miss Paul Manor.
Then a huge event, a camp concert. Professional entertainers and the Lou Fisherman's Choir performed in the long Nissen hut that was the camp canteen.
And now, led by the choir, a sing song.
The other night, dear, as I lay dreaming.
Rows of soldiers and girls sang with a sudden, rolling, bellowing roar that gave the song an emotional power the composer could never have dreamed of. Oh, my wartime childhood. The stinging smoke and sickly beer smell. And in the comforting dark, rows of soldiers and not enough girls. It was my childhood, but it was their youth. Hands tight round willing waists, female cheeks against harsh army tunics, bawling out their fervor for the moment with a passion I could sense but not comprehend. Their passion was not to get at the Germans, of course, but to stay forever, if possible, in the warm half-dark, against the pressure of another body that might be snatched away. They had the threat of extinction to sharpen their senses. We kids hung round the soldiers constantly, cadging rides, holding their rifles, wearing their forage caps, and swinging on the big iron gates at the entrances to the drives of Double Boy's house to watch lorries and even tanks rumble in and out. Teddy Worthing, a six-year-old evacuated with his mother, was one of a row of us sitting on the gate when a lorry came round the corner, caught the end of the gate, pulled it off its hinges, and threw us into the bushes. But Teddy went under the gate, and the gate went under the lorry.
Auntie Rose! Auntie Rose! Come quickly! Teddy Worthing's dead! He's dead!
You're covered in blood. What's happened?
They're bringing him!
Bringing him? Do you mean...
A sentry, accompanied by the bemused driver and three children, was carrying Teddy's tiny, crumpled body to number 3 railway cottages where he had lived.
What are you doing? What are you doing, ma'am?
Are you the mother?
No. Where are you taking him?
The children said he lives in the cottages here.
Well, what are you trying to do? Give his mother a present, you bloody fool? Give him to me.
Here you are. Oh, I didn't know where to...
Where's Mrs. Worthing? Does anyone know?
She's coming, Auntie Rose. She's seen...
Oh, Teddy. My little mite. What will she do?
Auntie Rose took Teddy's mother into our house, where she lay crumpled and sobbing on the sofa, watched by our detached, curious eyes until we were driven out. So much emotion seemed more than one person could contain. Her body jerked and heaved as her grief tore its way out of her. Jack and I, Jimmy Peters, the Bunny Boys and Ken Plummer were to carry Teddy's coffin to the station to put it on the 9 a.m. express, a farewell gesture from us all. A military band was to lead us. The whole of Double Boys followed. Because I was the smallest boy, I was in the middle and had to hold my hands up to reach the coffin. It was not long enough to accommodate three boys aside, and nobody had taught us to walk in step, so as we tripped and shuffled along, my heels and shins were skinned by the hobnailed boots of the boys behind and in front of me, while I inflicted similar injuries on them. The station master, stout and self-important, held the train as we filed down the slope of station approach between two rows of soldiers. Passengers stared from the train as we clumsily put Teddy in the strong-smelling guard's van, on straw that was laid for some tethered creature, a calf or goat, that stirred uneasily at the activity round it. The train departed, and we coffin bearers turned and ran hard to school in Dobwalls over a mile away. But I was the only one from the junior vacuum class in the isolated tin hut.
Terry Foster, you're late again. What's your excuse this time?
Look at the time. Your legs.
all scratched and bloody. What have you been doing? Football? Fighting? Climbing?
No, miss.
No fibs. 40 minutes you're late. This is a record, I think.
Please, miss.
Be quiet, Shirley Burford. Terry, come here.
The dreaded ruler was produced. God knows how such a failure of communication had occurred in our gossip-ridden little community, but Mrs. Langdon knew nothing of the double boys' ceremony.
Now go to your place.
Yes, miss.
And don't be late again.
Please, miss.
Be quiet, Shirley. And stop snivelling, Terry. You've had that much before and earned it.
Please, miss.
Yes, what is it, Shirley?
Please, miss. He's been carrying Teddy Worthing's coffin. They put you on the train this morning at Double Boys. My lady said, I heard.
Oh, my.
Jack and I used to go shopping with Auntie Rose once a week in Liscard, 4 miles away. But the great events that filled us with excitement were the train rides to Plymouth over Saltash Bridge. Local legend said that the bridge moved a foot every time a train crossed. I got the railway timetable and multiplied the trains by the number of weeks since the bridge was built, then wondered why it hadn't either edged itself up the Tamar or sidled miles out to sea. We stared at the warships, low, grey and indescribably menacing, lying in the Tamar estuary. Then Plymouth and the Hoe. The statue of Drake with his bowls, a stylish reminder of how to reduce the enemy to size. And pasties that tasted of potato and pepper, but had never seen meat. Over these expeditions presided Auntie Rose with 2 loaded shopping bags. A cameo brooch was pinned to her best blouse, and a shapeless hat that required hat pins to hold it was crammed onto her long, thick brown hair done up in a bun. One evening, we were waiting in Plymouth North Road Station Buffet for a train that was very late. Bombing up the line was the dark rumour. Jack had bought a miniature sheath knife in its leather sheath, something he'd been coveting and saving for ages. We kept taking it from the shopping bag and half withdrawing the glistening blade. Our heads bent over it as we experimented how to hang it from his belt. At the side, or secretly at the back, like a hunter's knife. It was a formidable purchase. The date was March the 21st, 1941, the first day of spring, and the first of the 3 nights on which the Luftwaffe wiped the centre of Plymouth from the face of the earth.
Come on, boys, put that knife away till the proper time. When you get home, you play with that, not in here. You lose it. Oh, dear, what's that?
Air raid siren.
All passengers in the subway, please.
Right, boys. Now, hold up, back, Jack. I've got this one. Here, Teddy, by me. We'll be all right down here.
Are they bombs? No, they're all guns. Shoot the jellies down. Bomb whistle. Where's my knife?
What?
My new sheath knife. It's gone.
Well, perhaps it's in this bag. Here, let's see.
I left it in the buffet.
Now, come back. Come back, boy. Oh, he's gone.
Here's the knife. Auntie Rose, it's in this bag. I got it! Jack, I got it!
I flew between the huddled groups of people, turned a corner, and started up the slope towards platform level. I stopped and stood bawling, afraid to move, when hands grabbed me.
Here, boy, come here! You can't stand out there!
Let me go! My brother! My brother's up there!
What, your brother?
He's lost his knife!
What are you talking about?
Here, Teddy, here he is with me. Came back.
And there stood Jack. His courage, too, had failed him at the sight and sound of the real war.
I'm all right, Terry.
You gave me heart failure, you did, both of you.
We spent the night sitting on a bench while the inferno raged above us. My principal memory, after the initial knife panic, was that no matter how I shook with fright, the bench, which sat about 10 people, always quaked at a different rhythm. And I couldn't get my bottom synchronized to the common tempo of terror. The next morning, we stood among debris on the platform till a train took us across the miraculously unscathed Saltash Bridge. Plymouth was ablaze. Smoke hung everywhere. At each station, crowds of people met the train to ask for news or just to stare at us. As we pulled into Double Boy Station, there, right at the end of the platform, stood Uncle Jack, looking ridiculously small and vulnerable till he saw the three of us waving wildly from a window. Then his shut face burst open into a grin that threatened to tear it in two.
Oh, Dougal! There you are! There you are!
Oh, of course I am. What do you think? Let me go, you fool. People are watching.
Oh, yeah. Give me those bags. I'll carry them. You looked after her boys, then, did you, for me?
It was cryptic, Uncle Jack.
I know, so scared.
I thought I'd got rid of you all at last. But there's no peace for the wicked, is there?
The bombing continued for 3 nights, but Plymouth burned for longer than that. Under a pall of smoke all day, and by night, making a red glow to the east like a false dawn. One morning during this, I stood in the court, unable to believe my eyes.
Auntie Rose! Auntie Rose! There's a German plane coming!
What?
Look! It says so low!
Oh, don't be daft. It's Red Cross. Look!
The German crosses! See?
Look, they're waving. You can see him plain.
He's the gunner!
Well, wave back, boy!
Oh! I think he's gonna crash! Look! He's coming down in the valley!
Oh, my God. Do you think they were Germans?
Of course they were.
Why didn't they parachute?
I think they were too low.
That poor boy. I saw him. Young, like my Gwyn. Why didn't he shoot us if he was German?
He must have been a Saxon. One of Uncle Jack's friends.
But Dobwalls and Double Boys were due for more shocks. The soldiers piled into their Bedford lorries and rode away. The district just had time to heave a corporate sigh of relief when the roar of different motors was heard. Vast, high-bonneted, high-sided lorries which the occupants called trucks, with names like Dodge and Chrysler. Yes, it was the Americans.
Hello there, my lovelies. Where have you been to, then? Tis nearly all over.
In that part of Cornwall, people from the next village were strangers. Englishmen from across the Tamar were foreigners. These men might have been from Mars.
Oh, my good God.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my. Mr. Buckroyd. Mr. Buckroyd. Mr. Buckroyd. Mr. Buck. Mr.
Yes, Miss Palmanner, I know, but you see, there's a...
Where have you seen?
Yes, Miss Palmanner.
They're black. All are they? Black as night, black as the instant space.
All over, all the way up and down.
So they just say.
They can see in the dark. They too, wouldn't they?
What, their backsides too?
Yes, everything.
And their hair. They cut it with crimping shears, they do.
Scissors ain't strong enough.
Critters of the devil.
They're fuzzy wuzzies.
They got white palms to their hands. I saw one when I shook hands with one of them.
It was worn off, that's why.
Does it wash your heart?
And their lip.
They got John Thomas's like Craigo's bow. 22 inches of uncontrolled flesh.
Oh, they oughtn't to be out loose, were not safe.
They was very silly-eye in the shop the other day.
They're mad for white women, Miss Palmanner.
Oh, we'll all be whipped in our beds.
Don't you worry, Miss Palmanner. They'll make an exception in your case.
I think they're lovely boys. Nicer in our lot.
It's no good thinking in terms of colour prejudice. The village wasn't prejudiced. It was astounded. And we kids, we loved them. We wore their hats, chewed their gum, held their strange hands and ate their candy. Rides on army vehicles doubled. Jeeps were the big treat, tooth-loosening, rebounding joy rides across the fields. And these smiling, gentle men who came from God knows what hells in southern segregated USA let us pat and pull their hair, rub them to see if it came off, examine their pink palms, marvel at their very existence. And then they were gone, just as suddenly as they appeared. And were replaced by other Yanks, white ones, no less friendly, no less generous, but with not a tenth of the exotic appeal of their delightful black comrades.
She may safely grace a sight.
Jack. Jack,
I want
you.
I want
some words.
Hey, girl, can't you hear? This is important. And this isn't. Listen.
Important now.
All right, you two. That's all for today.
Can we go out now, Uncle Jack?
Yes, go on.
Uncle Jack, my voice keeps going funny.
Don't you dare let it break till after the silver voice competition at chapel. You'll both wipe the floor with all them Christians. We'll show them heathens can...
What? I'm the father.
Oh, don't be silly, boy.
Well, I am. I love her.
Go on out and play.
She told me she loved me.
It isn't what she said to you that matters. It's what she did with somebody else.
Your stomach's getting enormous. That's the baby. Do you remember when you didn't believe me about babies?
I was young then.
Feel. It moves.
Ugh, like a frog squirming.
Iopa is a yank. They was best.
This is a happy occasion that brings us here together this evening, the East Cornwall Silver Voice Competition, in which we will try to decide which of our children has been blessed with the voice that will win this splendid trophy, plus 5 shillings worth of national savings. And now, let us pray. Oh, Lord, bless the efforts of these, your children, who will try to bring beauty in the midst of destruction. Give our judges fair and clear minds, guide our organist fingers, and bless all our troops wherever they may be. Amen.
Feeling nervous, boys?
Yes, a bit.
That's good. You take good breaths. You'll see them all off.
Here, boy, put your tie straight and pull that sock up. That's right. Now we both look a proper pair.
Here, move up, can you? There's no room.
Oh, come in by here, Elsie. Sit by me.
Oh, not crowded, is it?
Our first contestant this evening is John Lavender from East Tappas. John is going to sing Jerusalem.
Mr. Buckroyd!
Yes, Miss Palmera.
In view of the fact that most of the children of the district are here this evening, I wonder if you fully approve of the congregation.
I don't think I understand, Miss Palmera.
Well, this here is a children's occasion. Oh, we should be protecting them from corruption.
No, she's looking at me.
While our men folk are away fighting God's holy war, we women folk should be setting an example, not pointing the way down the primrose path to damnation. I think you all know to whom I refer.
I'm sorry, Mr. Buckroyd. I am honest. I just came to hear the boys sing.
Bloody sit down and don't you... We all know she'd like to have been in this state years ago, only nobody touch her. What? Bloody dried up old haybag.
Now, Mr. Phillips, that is not Christian.
Well, I'm not a Christian, thank God. Come on, Rose. Come on, boys. Let's breathe some clean air outside. Elsie, my lovely, you want to walk home with us?
East Cornwall never did get its silver voice for that year, 1943. But the voice of propriety, the voice of conformity, had a strength then that went far beyond the outbursts of frustrated old maids, as we all discovered when the Vackie's billeting officer came and went one day. He missed Uncle Jack, which was just as well.
What the hell did he mean? Moral surroundings?
Well, he wanted to know if Terry was still allowed to play with Elsie. He's 10 and she's 15 and she's a bad example.
Oh,
and...
God. God, save us all from the clutches of the bloody holy ones.
Oh, Jack Bach.
The sooner they all go to heaven and leave us down by her in peace.
Terry! Terry!
Oh, no.
Hey, boy, stop. I want you.
What's up? Cat got your tongue? Well, I haven't seen you at choir practice lately. Not coming now? I see. Well, give Mr. and Mrs. Phillips my regards, won't you?
I hate you.
What?
You're taking Jack and me away.
Who is? Your parents?
No, you, the holy ones. And Elsie, too.
What the devil are you talking about?
See? You swear, too.
The Reverend Buckroyd took a swift hand in our affairs. A phone call from him to Welling Police Station sent a constable to call on Mum and Dad. frightening the life out of them into the bargain. A return phone call from Dad soon settled where we should stay. But Buckroyd couldn't wave his wand over Elsie. Her foster parents couldn't face a newborn illegitimate baby, and that was that. Elsie's father was a prisoner of the Japanese. Her mother was nowhere to be found. Whether through enemy action or allied attraction, I don't know. And so Elsie was bound for a home. Homes for unmarried mothers appeared all over the country during the war. Meanwhile, great events were taking place in the world. North Africa was taken from Rommel. The Russians were turning defeat into triumph.
Africa is cleared. All German and Italian armies in Africa have been annihilated. And at least 500,000 prisoners are in our hands. In a brilliant campaign of 38 days, Sicily, which was defended by over...
Our three-year other childhood came to a swift climax. With air raids more or less over, Jack returned home to go to Woolwich Polytechnic, and I was awaiting the results of my exam for Dartford Grammar School.
Auntie Rose! Auntie Rose! The nurse has come! He's come! He says Kent Education Committee.
Well, open it, boy. Let's see.
There's a telegram, too.
Telegram? What's it say on it?
Just telegram. War Office.
Oh, dear. Open it, Terry. The telegram. Open it. Read it. No, bring it here. No, read it. I can't.
The war is Whitehall, London, 2:35 p.m, 14th July, 1943. We regret to inform you that your son, Gwyn, has been...
Does it say it? Does it say it?
Dear Mum and Dad, just a line to let you know that Auntie Rose and Uncle Jack's son, Gwyn, has been killed in Sicily. They are very unhappy. Auntie Rose keeps crying, and Uncle Jack keeps going to the bottom of the garden and sitting there instead of going to work. And as Jack is home with you now, I thought it would be a good idea if I stayed here and became Auntie Rose's and Uncle Jack's son and you had Jack. Then you both have one each. That's fair. I'd go to the county school in Liscard and get the 412 home. I like it here, so it'll be all right. Love... Terry. Can I come and sit with you, Uncle Jack?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, come here, boy. Time you had a haircut, isn't it?
Ow, it's not that long.
Little blondie, Anglo-Saxon. Gwyn was dark, you know. Like me, the Celt. The soft underbelly of Europe. The mud was soft in Flanders, too. Didn't save anybody. What was he doing in Sicily, eh? What did he have to do with them? Twice we've had to fight the Germans. I bet they wonder why, too. Remember, boy, never, 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 never trust your leaders. Montgomery's a hero. Churchill's a hero. Gwyn is dead. Rose thinks the Germans killed him, huh? And it's not just this war or the last. It's all of history. Into the valley of death rode the 600, huh? Who sent them there? Don't ever trust them, boy. Not any of them.
Jack? Jack? Mr. Buckroyd here. He'd like to see you.
Oh, no, not the bloody vicar. They don't just kill you. They send someone to tell you next of kin is over the best.
Good afternoon, Mr. Phillips.
Hello, Terry.
Hello, sir.
I can't tell you how sorry I am, Mr. Phillips.
Then don't try, Vicar.
Yes. I suggested to your wife a memorial service.
What did she say?
She would like it, if you don't mind.
No, no, let her have it. I'll be there.
Good. I'm sure you've made the right decision.
Only, Vicar, nothing about souls, eh? Or heaven, eh? Or eternal life, or any of that, eh? A memorial service. Let's just remember him.
I'll vet everything myself. I'm sure he died a hero, Mr. Phillips.
Are you now? Well, I've seen a few of them die. Ashes to ashes and mud to mud.
Yes. Well, good afternoon, Mr. Phillips. I think Mrs. Phillips would like me to have a word with her.
Thank you.
You're a good man, Vicar, in spite of being a Christian.
I like it here, boy. Look at the wind on that hayfield and the valley and the compost heap there to remind us what we're coming to.
And the railway. That's good.
Yes. Let's have a service by you for Gwyn. You and me, eh? An Anglo-Celtic service, is it? You know that song you learned last week? Sing it, boy. That's suitable. Go straight to the third verse, you know? And death is printed on his face.
And death is printed on his face, and o'er his heart is stealing, and haste away to comfort
me. I've got a letter here from your mother.
So have I.
You do want to go home, is it?
It's not that.
Well, you see, you can't stay with us. As it is, you'll have to sleep down in the front hall there for a bit, till you go home to your mum and dad, because we must have you a room at once. Oh, don't look so pained. Guess who's going in there?
Soldiers?
Elsie.
Honest?
We're going to have Elsie and her little one. And she'd better move in quick, or they'll be shunting her off to that home, that workhouse place, and that's fit for nobody, certainly not Elsie and her baby. So you go up and get your things out.
Can I go and tell Elsie?
She knows, silly.
Well, can I go until I know, too?
Oh, Elsie! Watch out, boy! You break something!
A week later, I lay in terror on my mattress on the hall floor, listening, while Elsie, up in my room, gave me another lesson on the facts of life. No excuse for me to disbelieve any longer what went where, or to puzzle how a whole baby came out of there. I crept fearfully into the kitchen, and there was Uncle Jack with a glass in his hand.
Oh, boy, too noisy to sleep with it. She always was a noisy girl. Now's her chance.
Is Elsie all right?
Right as rain, yeah. Oh, simple this. Drink the baby's health. Say, good health and long life to you, Sambor.
Is it a boy, then?
Black as pitch. Pretty little thing. I'm going to have to learn some Negro spirituals to teach him for the Silver Voice competition, eh? They're good singers, those darkies.
Is it black all over?
Just about. Well, it's a good thing. He'll do a lot for Rose being here. The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away, as the bloody vicar would say.
A few days later, on Double Boys Station, I boarded the Cornish Riviera for Paddington. I was 10 and a half when my other childhood ended. I had fewer people to see me off than Teddy Worthing, but there were enough. Elsie with her baby, and Auntie Rose and Uncle Jack. Oh, Auntie Rose and Uncle Jack. 10 shillings a week per vacay was the official allowance, and in return, they had given themselves without stint. Was there ever such a bargain? Yes, they were about to give Elsie the same for nothing. They were without guile and without self-interest. The salt of the earth was the saying. And whenever the earth needed salting, Auntie Rose and Uncle Jack were there to do it.
Goodbye, Terry. Give my respects to your mum and dad. Write soon.
Bye, Terry.
Oh, we'll miss you, boy.
See you in London one day. Say goodbye, Louis. Bye-bye. Say bye-bye.
Bye, Elsie.
Bye, Louis. Goodbye, Uncle Jack.
Goodbye, boy. Look after you.
Oh, now don't cry, Jack, for God's sake. You stand me off.
Just remember two things, boy. It's not fair, and don't be late.
Bye.
Bye.
Be a good boy.
Goodbye.
Bye. Bye, Terry.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh,
In Just Remember Two Things, It's Not Fair and Don't Be Late, written and narrated by Terence Frisby, Ray Smith played Uncle Jack, Petra Davis, Aunt Rose, Charles Clark, Terry, and Boris Hunker, Jack. Polly James was Mum, Caroline Gruber, Elsie and Miss Langdon, John Baddeley, Mr. Buckroyd, Barbara Atkinson, Granny Peters, Zila Clark, Miss Polmanna, Danny Schiller, the Cornish driver, and Richard Pierce, Cannon. The play was directed by Matthew Walters.